Hey, what's good, everyone? It is Samir from Beat Fino Podcasts. Hope you're all well. Just taking this quick time to make a little shout out to our sponsors. Definitely recommend this one. Check it out. This podcast is sponsored by the Music Producers Guild of New Zealand, Aotearoa. The Music Producers Guild is an advisory service that assists and empowers our music producer industry here in New Zealand. Members get personalized contracts for their music production, free Serato Studio Sample and DJ Pro, access to discounted audio equipment and software, and advice from industry professionals. Buy your plugins through the Music Producers Guild website to help support us all in growing our community. For more information and to sign up as a member, please visit www.mpgnz.co.nz. Huge shout out to the Music Producers Guild of New Zealand for sponsoring Beat Fino. Super stoked to be able to share such a positive driving force for New Zealand music on the world stage. Please check them out. Super stoked to be in the guild myself. And I know for a lot of you guys wanting to take their music to the next level, super honored to have this opportunity to be around the industry professionals and soak up all the benefits. Back to here to the podcast. Thank you so much all for hanging in and enjoying this testimony so far. Feel free to pop a little message in to our page. Let us know how you've enjoyed this podcast. And stay tuned for more Beat Fino episodes. But here, back to the podcast. Here on Beat Fino Podcasts.
Sweet. Welcome everyone to Beat Fino Podcasts. We are on to episode 36. And this week we are with Tom from Lee Matthews. What's going on, man?
What's up, man? How's it going?
Oh, so good, bro. And super blessed to keep doing the podcast and making the most of it for the Auckland kids. So, you know, it's been good. Get hold of
you. Yeah, man. No, it's all good. Happy to be here.
Oh, shot my bro. And I'm gonna get Graham on, but hopefully on a future podcast for sure. But how's things been with you, my bro?
Yeah, good, man. Keeping pretty busy. Managed to keep a few things rolling, as you know, through lockdown. So although it was quite short, it's kind of nice. Now back into the whole working mode and ready for the weekend.
Oh, awesome, my bro. And nah, it was super cool. For those that don't know, you also do a bit of work on the more professional side, recording and all that as well, down at Woodcut, my bro. And it's been awesome to sort of see the journey there. We'll be talking more on the show there as well. So for those that don't know, share us a little bit about the Lee Matthews sort of music and I guess maybe even sort of the bit of a roots. Probably the best way to start is like childhood memories for you of music, my bro.
Yeah, so started music when I was 13. Picked up a guitar because I asked Big Mum for it for my birthday. And then after that, slowly played in bands all through high school, metal bands as well. So I was pretty into hardcore rock. And then after that, sort of dived into electronic music at a place called Mains in Auckland. So I'm initially from the UK, then from Christchurch, and then moved up to Auckland, which is at Mains where I met my friend Graham, who I now run Lee Matthews with. So my name is Tom Lee. His name is Graham Matthews. And that's how Lee Matthews sort of formed. We met each other there with a love for all things bass music, and now we're here.
Yeah, no, that's so good, bro. And it's actually cool you mentioned about how much comes from sort of when you join things like Mains and SAE and the people you meet there. And I mean, more so I think than anything else, what you get from there is that sense of people we're for the same thing, eh, bro?
Yeah, that's it. And we had quite a cool year of like different people that went on to do different things, and so it created quite a cool creative environment. There was ourselves, T1R in our year, Stranger Than Me, Leon, and there was Randa, the rapper, and there was Lucky Lance of Team Dynamite as well. So we had quite a cool little creative group that went on to do some cool things, yeah.
Yeah, hard, bro. And even sort of the cat's more sort of in those pockets. I don't remember. I think from memory, you might remember Jordan Olsen. Was he like in any of your years or just?
Yes, yeah. He's a Palmy boy, eh?
Yeah, bro. That's what I thought. I remember you on the same status as that. I just was like, oh, there we go. But
I did audio engineering with him.
Yeah, man. Well, that's it. He helped me a lot, bro. He actually taught me ADSR like in the whole beginning of things, and it was like mind blowing sort of thing. so yeah, like we keep the super producer geeky as well on the show. But God, we digress. Sort of getting back to that time that you were at Mainz and the people obviously were in the same year. So just run us through. You're in Auckland. You were sort of getting into electronic music a few years before that while you were doing all the band stuff, or was it sort of like artists that really captured your attention sort of thing?
Yeah, it was. This is cliche as, but Skrillex really kind of won me over.
But it's so cliche because this is the 15th person on Beat Photo. But it's all good because it's so good, bro. It's so good.
He definitely sort of like won it over. Like there was the Rusko and like Casper and stuff, like when it was sort of kicking off. And then really like I went to a Skrillex show actually, and it was a huge lineup. It was Skrillex, Nero, and Nero was another one that sort of converted me over. Foreign Beggars, Trolley Stature, and Inspector Dubplate. And that was really, really epic. And that was sort of made me go, I want to be a DJ.
Yes, bro. And it's the fire of the energy is just, man, it's full force back then, isn't it, bro?
Oh, yeah, that was like 2011 as well.
Yeah,
so
bro, the big year of
yeah.
I think it was Tomorrowland 2011 that I saw when I was in the after movie, and that captured me. That was a goodie.
I remember that.
So I got into things with house and all that, my bro. Did you find, was it sort of like that dubstep stuff was like your main inspiration, or were there other things like house too in the mix?
So at the start it was, because I came from a metal background, it was like, it has to, like back in the day it used to be like, if it doesn't have a guitar in it, it sucks. And then it changed from, if it doesn't have a guitar in it, it sucks, to if it doesn't have like, if it's not dubstep or drum and bass, it sucks. Like super narrow-minded, and that was like really, really sort of what fired off the passion. And then I think going to Mainz opened my umbrella a little bit. Like I remember the summer of 2013, like Disclosure played at Rhythm and Vines, and that was just like, whoa, like, so that sort of got me on like a house tip. And I also really didn't like hip hop when I started Mainz either. And then like, again, my horizons were broadened and I sort of just started diversifying, like, loved a bit of mid-tempo, like garage, like all sorts of stuff. Yeah, just went really sort of broad range from there. Even like, you know, like lo-fi beats sort of culture. Like, so yeah, it was interesting, but love it all now.
Yeah, hard, bro. No, I totally agree with you on that whole thing where when you're immersed around the people, it opens your mind. But especially the music, they like, even where you're not into it, they're playing it, and then because it kind of rubs off on you, next thing you know you're like sitting in a session on Ableton or Freeze, like, hey, I just made some of this song. I didn't expect to be doing this. It just kind of comes into you.
Yeah, that's it. And I think one of the things that I started to say in the end was, I like it if it's good, and that's that, you know, like if I hear it and I'm like, yo, this is sweet, like, then that just happens with music. And there is no real, I'm obviously predisposed to like dubstep and drum and bass, especially now drum and bass, but yeah, definitely if it's good, it's good.
Nah, 100%, bro. I'm not gonna lie, I think this for me, drum and bass was something where but the speed caught me. I'm like, if I could just produce this, you know, it happened eventually, but you find your tricks. But what I love about that, yeah, drum and bass is there is a sense of like the possibilities now when you hear people do that, yeah, that sort of half speed stuff, but it still sounds like fast in its own way. And I know a lot of people in New Zealand kind of latched onto that when we saw even being stuck at home and like all these people that were stuck in houses, they were like hearing more diverse ranges of music because it wasn't just, oh, they're at Mahi, they're just listening to what's on radio. They, like, their radio was literally that one DJ in the house that was in the flat, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I didn't think about that because I just, I was locked down with my wife, and so like, life was just as is. We listened to the radio and I worked on music on my headphones. So like, you know, we don't share that sort of living space, but yeah, I can totally see how that would happen.
Yeah, bro. So no, it actually helped me more. But what was cool about sort of seeing it as well is the rise of that free time. It was cool. I actually just listened to Aroha's yarn where she said, I've never had this much time to just sit down and focus on production, which we both know takes a lot of time when you're first getting into it, eh, bro?
Yeah, man. And I think one of the, don't get me wrong, I still had time to produce during lockdown, but because a lot of my work is contract based, I, you know, if I stopped working, I was not going to make any money at all. And so I went on the Zoom hustle and was working on a lot of other people's music during the lockdown time, but that was cool. And I'm glad that, you know, people were like, yeah, I've got a lot of time. I want to invest and learn. And, you know, because I could have been very easily out of work in that case.
Yes, exactly, bro. It's one thing I loved is actually, I mean, as you can imagine, I got a bit of mahi in my own way, but what was cool is to see that there were like people had limitations and excuses. And there was like this period of time where like, you either go in now and like make the most of it, or there's this feeling of, all that free time, like we mentioned. But yeah, for sort of like a bit of more background as we go into production, my bro, what was the sort of first earliest recollections? Was there like a software you guys learned at mains, or were you kind of getting into it before that sort of time? What was the sort of,
No, I remember because I went to do the DJ course and it was DJ and electronic music production. And I had no idea about production. And I'd written a lot of music on guitar and like in a group sort of scenario, but nothing in a DAW. And obviously being hooked on Skrillex, I actually got Fruity Loops first and tried following a couple of tutorials to try and make like a bass sound or something like that. And I remember it was so hard. I was just like, oh man, this is so difficult.
I hope you've been watching Seamless tutorials because that dog talks fast, bro.
I have no idea, man. Like is like a long, long time ago. And I actually was like, oh man, I don't know about this production stuff. And then we went to mains and we learned Ableton. And I feel like every beginner has this, but like I had that like, oh man, I really, really have. I have all these ideas in here. And especially like now, I have an idea in my head. I can sound design it. I can write the melody immediately. And it's like, it's very flowy. Whereas like, back then it was like, oh, I just can't get it out. And that was one of the most frustrating things. And I remember there was like a point with production where I felt like I was just sort of like not doing what I wanted to do. And I was working really, really hard at it, like really trying to figure it out. And I like the musical side came kind of easy because I knew how to make chords and stuff. It was just, I think getting over that hurdle of how to input it into the DAW was a big moment, because I think from there onwards, like it just started to click. And I was obviously a way more beginner terms than I am currently, but it felt like the pieces were moving. And I'd say that was about 4 months, 5 months in maybe.
Yes. Wow. And it's actually, you don't realize how much engineering goes into even just putting music into the computer, eh, bro? it's kind of like not that you would think it's buttons, but the level of engineering, I guess it's all like you said, when you work real hard, it's about getting everything to click into place, which is why I love, I think for people who are just starting on that journey, when they hear of you speak whānau, kōrerōs, it's like, you know, it does take time, but it's that knowing, okay, you know, you have something, you might have played this as a kid, or, you know, especially from DJing, you actually know the BPM, and you, there's things you can get that can help show, okay, there's a puzzle, there's some pieces there. Like you said, bro, you know, it's when things start clicking into place, you realize, hey, you've held on for it. And like you said as well, investing, bro, something I've only just started doing recently, but the investing, like, on its own, you know, when you're putting money down, there's like that feeling of, hey, like, that's serious now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man, I totally agree. And I think one of the, I suppose my investment, so to speak, was mains, you know, like that was, I did 3 years of audio engineering and 1 year of DJ and electronic music production. And so it's a lot of time. And yeah, I learned a shitload from that. And I think it gave me the tools to, and I mean, not saying that you can't self-learn at all, but like it gave me the tools to, you know, leave from mains and sort of find, you know, I can teach myself things now. Like I look at a topic and I'm like, yep, no, that makes sense. And I can sort of figure out how to go from there. And so that's mean that I'm at that stage. But yeah, like you said, you need to invest to be able to do that. Otherwise, it's sort of just like, you're like a headless chicken. Like, oh
yeah, and that's the famous conception. It's probably to the kind of put it all together. It's a mixture of time as well as money. Yeah, it's like it's all in, bro. Like you can't sort of just say, I got the money or I've got the time.
Yeah, and when you lean on that, like that, the time comment, like that is so important. Like the amount of time that you have to spend tweaking a sound is for real. And like, and there's also just like, you know, opening the computer, opening the DAW, and just doing the same process every time, and getting faster and faster and faster, and understanding better ways to do everything. And I think with a lot of younger producers, and if you are a younger producer listening to this, there's, I think maybe, especially very, very green producers, there's like a, I don't know, like a myth or like the idea or the concept that it's kind of easy, and then they get into it and then realize it's really not.
Yes, and, well, DJing as well is not like you think, oh, well, the DJs are making all the music, so, well, you know, I can DJ, so I must be getting it. I was like, oh.
Yeah. And then I think what some people do is they get to that stage, realize it's a lot harder, and then kind of just back out. And I think what I'd like to say in terms of like a message of is just persevere. Go get past the first hurdle, because once you do, it's like a lifelong addiction. You can't think
about it. We talked on the podcast with a few people about it. It becomes a never-ending jigsaw puzzle, but a very fun one. And you become like so in love with the idea that you're always going to keep putting it. So yeah, bro, like, well said, my bro. Sort of as we touch more into the show, this is kind of a cool testimony part, my bro. So you've met some cool people along the way, my bro. You mentioned a few T1R, and there's actually a lot of amazing people in Maine's. Like, it's almost like a sort of rite of passage for so many of these cats who have moved on. But
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, man. Sort of like touching back on that as well, as it's like we approach cool places and cool people, bro. What were some of the like first sets you ever got DJing, my bro?
Oh, damn.
I'm not going to bring up the...
No. It's hilarious. This is good. So when me and Graham very first started DJing, like we'd been DJing at Mains for a year. So we'd been like very practiced inside our little 2x2 little box where we could play with by ourselves with, you know, direct monitoring and no crowd. It was fine. Everything was good. And we were still playing off CDs at the time. Compact discs, for those that don't know what they are.
We couldn't afford the USB players.
And so around that sort of time, we were like, right, well, we feel like we're ready now. We want to get into the clubs. And so, like, I shit you not, on a Friday night, we would go out with mixed CDs and go and hand them to club owners at, like, 10 p.m. on like Wednesday nights to try and get a slot.
Wow.
And didn't really crack through. We got like a meeting with one owner because we were trying to sell him like trap music was like the alternate to hip hop.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we were like playing like Tonight, Hudson Mohawk, and like a whole bunch of.
Was starting. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that was like just kicking off. And then we sort of had like the odd gig here and there, like a friend was throwing one, and you got to play like bugger all time, like half an hour. And then our first like break was we did. Do you remember Code?
Yes.
So which is now Impala.
Yes.
We did that, and where there was a DJ competition, and that was like a thing where you had to do a mix, and then once you did the mix, you got sort of you got them put into a pool, and you had to get a certain amount of votes from people, like all your friends, which is basically just like a promoter marketing tip. And we got no votes. We got no votes at all. And because we both moved from like other cities, and so our like Auckland pool of friends was quite small. And yeah, we moved up and did that competition, but we had like bugger all votes. But the resident DJ also had like a say in the picking, and he was like, I like these guys. And so he picked us, and he like kind of overrode the vote, and we got a residency amongst a few others that had the high votes as well. And we got in playing trap, dubstep, drum and bass. And so we have our first Saturday night set at like 2 a.m. or something like that. And the bar manager at the time said to us, he was like, so can you, you know, like play top 40 in electro? And we were like, what? And he told us this like on the morning of the gig, and we were still on the CD vibes. And so we were like straight onto the like Zippy Share, just downloading every Rihanna remix that you can possibly think of.
Yeah, you can only find stuff like that, a Pitbull on the Zippy Share remix.
Yeah. So, and we got thrown into the deep end, and we played like a peak time sort of Saturday night slot. And this was back when clubs closed at like 6 a.m.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we gave it a go, and we did all right. I think that's probably one of the most nervous I've been ever to play a show. But yeah, no, we did all good and went onwards and upwards, I guess.
That's so cool that you mentioned that. I guess key takeaway out of that, and now that you mentioned, is like, the ability to be adaptive and just kind of be like, nah, that's, you got to do what you got to do. You got to play that game to flip the script. And like I've done so much of those nights myself, bro. And they're good. They're really good. And you come away knowing it's not the music I represent myself by sure, but you know your purpose and you know what you bought that night for the overall vibe, and you feel you know, there's something there, there's still your energy there, even though it's, you know, that sort of top 40, you know, it's your take, you know, your programming before middle and end.
Yes, yeah. And like we went on to doing it like a lot. Like we played Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at like three venues a night. We're all over town. And then we were starting to put out music at the same time. So it was like DJing was like roughly here on the town circuit. And then we just started putting out tunes. And then we started to put out more music. And it was quite polarizing because we'd be playing in town. And we'd be playing like Jay-Z, like, you know, like all of the just like classic, just whatever works in
the 101 style.
Just whatever works. And like there'd be one night we'd be playing like relaxed house on the opening, then one night would just be full party bangers, then another night we'd be finishing, we'd be playing like our stuff. And then people would start to come to like things and be like, can you play this song? And we'd be like, no, because it's 10 p.m. and people are still eating dinner, so yeah. No.
Yeah, there's a cold of rice still gets all the time.
And then we went like, right, well, we need to sort of start stopping the kind of the party gigs and just start like sort of do it, like edging out the shows that we want to play. And that was like probably like about a year year or so to 2 year transition fully. He had to say no because we made a lot of friends and connections, and people were like, "Hey, bro, do you want to come play this show, please?" And we'd be like, "Nah, like,
yeah,
standing our ground." And
even with all that money, sometimes on the state, that's one thing; it's the other thing.
Yeah, and it was just nice to sort of eventually distance ourselves. And the shows got less, and we had to play less, but
yeah,
that was a good decision in the end.
Oh, hard, bro. Yeah. Nah, hard out, bro. I've been on the kind of on the same group of it, but I guess for a lot of people as well who start to see it is a big world out there, bro, and to actually share that as we move more into the testimony, bro, obviously with the productions getting to reach new audiences around the world, sort of at what point did you realize, oh, like, it's actually just as much people overseas listening to the music? Or was there sort of like little milestones for you production wise, like tracks that really helped you along the way, my bro?
Yeah, the first one was probably the lead single of our first EP, Nothing to Lose, which was like a future bassy sort of,
yes, I remember the one, yes,
tune with Marina Mariner, male vocalist.
Yeah.
I think one of the big ones was combining vocals and music, and that was,
yes,
you know, because I think a lot of, especially like sort of up and coming producers, there's some dudes making some crazy shit, but they don't have like the vocals to back it up, and they're using stuff from like Splice, which, yeah, again, there's nothing, yeah, wrong with that, but like
you can tell.
It yeah, makes your music so much more original when you're doing, you know, vocals from the start. And like,
yeah,
me and Graham were always involved in the songwriting process. We're like, so we know what the outcome's like. We're all like talking about the lyrics, melody, and like the whole recording process. It's not like we just get given the vocals and that's that. I mean, there are cases where that, yeah, that pretty much happens, but for the most part, it is like you're sitting there and recording it with them and sort of shaping it and crafting it. And so Nothing to Lose, when that first came out, that was like, I think something that kind of said to the listeners and people like Georgia FM and promoters and stuff, that it's like, oh, these guys are like, you know, they're doing something. And that was a big turning point for us, because that started getting some decent-ish radio play on Georgia FM. And yeah, but I think we got funding for that. Don't quote me on that, but we made a music video anyway, so which was really, really sick. And yeah, that really sort of was the turning point, I'd say.
Yes,
on from there.
Nah, hard, bro. I think it's that touch of like an original quality sort of your music, being able to do what you want to do, but also finding like vocalists as well that are kind of actually on the same wavelength, I guess, bro. Like I'm starting to notice here, like it's really cool to all be on the same page in a way, so when the audience hears it, they actually hear something that they can kind of relate to. There's something there, like you said, to sing along, and like you said, the opportunity to then get on radio, because you know it's something there that kind of catches everyone's attention. And moving kind of off on the piece, talking a little bit more about tracks from there, my bro, it was quite cool. I started hearing you kits on the radio as well, which was epic. And then I guess things started to evolve into more like a bigger audience, eh, bro, like people overseas and that, and to sort of just rush into it a bit. There was actually a cool moment there, a little bit of a milestone that I must bring up, the awards, my bro.
Oh yeah, shit, that was pretty cool, because we managed to get a few Georgies over the years, which are the Georgia FM Awards, that those of you who don't know, and we managed to get a solid few placings in those. And then it spoke to our manager, because you've got to hit certain requirements to get into the NZ Music Awards.
Yes.
And so she was like, oh, I think, you know, this year you guys have got a good shot at it, because you've got to put out a certain number of music within, yeah, a certain time period to be eligible for it. And then you've also, there's a bunch of judges that once, if you ask to be nominated, that they kind of like sign off that you go into the pool to then go a little bit further forward. And you've got to like put a case together and everything, like all your releases and that sort of stuff. And then even when we just to get nominated was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And against two people that like two groups I should say that me and Graham both really, really respect. Like when we even before I started DJing, I was watching State of Mind, I was watching Truth. You know, and as Kiwis, watching them fly the flag overseas has been so cool and super inspiring too. And so when we were even nominated against those guys, I was like, man, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And then to take it out was next level, bro. That was a big moment, and so that was really, really cool.
Yeah,
I had my mum watching at home in Christchurch, just losing it.
Wow, that's so awesome, bro. It's a testimony, man. And what I love is actually how all of this only brings the world to see New Zealand music more, bro. And like we think about cats like Quicks Montel, it's nothing but a great thing, eh, bro?
Yeah, man. And that's such a good attitude to have. And I want to, I guess, touch on that at the moment, because I feel like in the past, and probably still, there's a bit of a tall poppy syndrome that we have, where sometimes if people are doing well, New Zealanders tend to shit on,
on
people doing well, which is funny, I don't know. And so, like, sometimes, you know, I may not even, like, overly, you know, I won't excuse the term, but, like, with a certain style or sound, but I think if people are flying the Kiwi flag overseas, it is a win for every New Zealander in that sort of scene. And so everything should be about positivity and building everyone up. And you know, and I think this goes down to like a ground level, where I'm helping people with their productions, and they're able to come forward and grow and learn. And I think it just raises the bar at all levels. You know, if the bottom like comes up, like the standard of producers gets better at the bottom, then it only pushes the top higher. And I think that, I don't know.
Yes,
bro. Up the New Zealand music industry.
Yes, bro. It's incredible, bro. The rise of like, I have to mention on every episode of like things like SoundCloud on their own as a way for people to not just post remixes and mixes and mashups, but actually, yeah, like just get some things out there and get some feedback is huge. And it's actually cool as well. You would have a fair idea now, the support that even comes from those student radios and the kids like Radioactive. There's so much like in the background, I guess we could say, hey bro, and it's about just championing and saying, nah, like we're gonna support it all, eh, bro, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. And I think, you know, if people have got a good attitude and if people are nice and you know, and there's good music and there's a good attitude there, there's just, you know, there's all the potential in the world.
Yes, bro. No, it's so awesome. So I touched on a few cool things there. Before we head into kind of giving our little 2 cents, I just wanted to quickly touch on a couple things that we can look into, stay updated with, sort of what's in the plans for this year, or roughly speaking if things are sort of still on the low.
Yeah, so we've got a few label releases coming up with overseas labels. So that's really big for us, because I feel like the New Zealand drum and bass market is only so big, and I love all the support that we get from New Zealand, but I feel like for our career to go higher, we need to reach that further afield. And so getting these UK placements are really, really awesome from us, and I think it does like a twofold thing. I think Kiwis can see that, especially like if they're in the drum and bass scene and stuff like that, and they go, oh, that's awesome, that makes me feel like they're more validated. And so that's pretty epic for us too. So it does favors overseas and it does favors at home as well. And so yeah, a couple of label releases, and I think just we're really trying to like sort of tailor our sound now, and really kind of like put a lot of thought into where we want things to place and how we want them to land. And that's a lot of collaborations as well with some overseas teams. So that's also, but this is like way further afield, like not even this year, but there's collaborations that are starting to happen, which is really cool. Like with some European artists, UK artists, some more collaborations with our Australian friends. And I think just that whole international command and conquer sort of attitude.
The thing is, when someone's got to fly it, and you almost have to know as well, it's when, yeah, like you said, win for you in terms of kind of rising up there, because it's New Zealand, of course, and even the amount of testimony that has come from the music on those stations and being able to have something where people can see actually there is a path, and I testify on all the podcasts there, because it is, like you said, a world thing. There is just an abundance for everyone in New Zealand to really just keep flying it and bring more flags overseas, like you said, my friend.
That's it, man. Regardless if it's in drum and bass or in house or pop or whatever, like, just, you know, spread the Kiwi flag.
It's so awesome. Man, wrapping things up for people who are getting into it, and all, like you said, in all styles of music, whether that be production, DJing, or just getting to really find their place, because as we know, there's so much sides to music as well, even the sort of manager admin stuff there. For anyone looking into getting into it, my bro, they're a bit nervous, or maybe they just wanted to hear your kind of big gems you got along the way, from your experiences. What have been some kind of things that have helped you, that you might be able to share with everyone?
One thing I would probably say is, work harder, party less.
And sometimes you have to say no to the gigs that are going to be the ones you play at, but at the same time you have to be.
I never said no. I did all the parties, and so I would say that I feel maybe if we'd have spent more time honing our music craft, we might be a little bit further down the track. But I mean, who knows? That's all hearsay. But I guess, I feel like maybe more nights could have been spent doing more work. And because you look at some younger people's trajectories, and they shoot up and they get there real fast. Exactly, man. That's the case in point right there. And like, we've been in the scene DJing at the very least since 2013, 2012. So.
Yes.
Like, that's a long time. That's a long grind. Work more, party less.
Oh, it's so inspirational, bro. And yeah, so I guess when you really get to it, you see the party just in that studio, when you see what you can go on to do. And it's so awesome that you've shared your testimony for everyone here today, my bro. So yeah, sort of closing things off, my bro. We've heard about what you're up to and stuff. Thank you again so much for being on this podcast, my bro.
No worries at all, man.
Oh, awesome. And I'm sure we'll have another yarn, just as we do with, of course, being inspired by Joe Rogan. We'll probably have another episode if you want to. For everyone tuning in, that was episode 36 here on Beat Fino Podcast. We really appreciate your support. So please continue to share the episodes. Continue to follow and subscribe, and we will be on Patreon even bigger this year, with options for you to donate, podcast, you know, all the ghost stickers, promo cards. But thank you to everyone who has continued to support us, and we'll catch you on future episodes here on Beat Fino Podcast.